The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Booker Tor, very good, thank you. How are you guys doing today?
Yes, sir, excellent, thank you. Lots and lots of things to talk about. The New York Times cartoon, and then now the new New York Times cartoon being a big conversation for us and for our listeners. Your thoughts, Anthony? Is Israel justified in feeling insulted by these cartoons?
Well,
or this cartoon particularly?
I'm actually not sure, Howard, if it's the honest truth, because on the one hand, you know, the New York Times is pretty well known for depicting leaders, international leaders, leaders of other countries, in fairly disparaging terms. So certainly Prime Minister Netanyahu is in good company where that's concerned. When you look at the two cartoons, the one showing the Trump dog kind of picture, and the other one showing Netanyahu looking like Moses coming down from the mountain with his selfie stick, you know. So I don't know whether we're really justified in feeling affronted by these cartoons. I think on the one hand, it's interesting that the New York Times is very focused on the U.S. relationship with Israel and things that are going on in Israel. I think that that's an interesting thing. A lot of people feel that because the New York Times is Jewish owned, that they should really lead the campaign in order to try to present Israel in a more positive light. So that's another view that I've certainly seen come around. But overall, you know, the question is whether even the one with Netanyahu with his selfie stick, is that really an insult, or is that just a statement about Netanyahu as we know him, and really nothing new, really, you know. So the fact that it happens to be in the New York Times is kind of, you know, would we be affronted if that was published in you know, the Jerusalem Post, for example, or, you know, Yediot Ahronot, or one of the Israeli newspapers, without trying to take particular sides? I'm not sure, and I think we also need to be cautious about being too oversensitive about these things. Having said that, you know, we've had this discussion about anti-Semitism, and the question is, you know, whether this contributes in any way negatively or positively to the whole discussion on anti-Semitism. So in honesty, I haven't really formed a proper view of what I think about these cartoons, and whether I think we should be insulted or affronted by them or not.
My view is the second one. I do tend to agree. I just think it's unoriginal, boring, and a little obsessive in the nature of the cartoon. In other words, why Netanyahu again, and a little tone deaf as well, in the sense that they've just had this whole outcry. Why put another one in? That it's so really not necessary. So to me, it's more about the obsession with Netanyahu than it is about the nature of it. Maybe you could argue that he's replacing, that it looks like Israel is replacing religion, i.e. the Ten Commandments, with Zionism. You could look into it that way. You could, you know, theological replacement theory.
I think there could be a lot of different ways that you could, you know, view that particular one.
I do believe, again, by the way, that the first one is vehemently anti-Semitic. I believe that, you know, especially if you compare it with a cartoon that appeared in Die Stürme, I think it was the 1930s, where you had a Jew leading Churchill, you know, that Jew sort of leading global leaders, towards paths of destruction or whatever it would be.
I think there's a slight, difference, though, because here we're talking about two global leaders rather than just the Jew as such. And I think there is a slight difference. And I also just wondered to myself whether this is not a statement about how U.S. Jewry is feeling at the moment about Netanyahu, and how they're trying to present that in their own local market, in their own, perhaps, you know, neighborhood. The Jewish owners of the New York Times, what statement they're making about their views of Israel for friends and people who surround them within the New York area, and perhaps, you know, in the broader USA. You know, this is also something that comes to mind, as to whether this isn't a statement from U.S. Jewry and from individuals who represent U.S. Jewry rather than anything else.
I'd love your thoughts on it. 34519 or 061-895-1019. Other conversations. Anthony, it's back to Knesset Day for Israel, for the Israeli lawmakers, as the new Knesset will be sworn in later today. What is on the agenda?
Okay, so this is the 21st Knesset since the founding of the State of Israel in 1948. 120 Knesset members will be sworn in today. It's kind of ceremony and a family event. All the families will come along. They will get their Knesset ID cards, and they will get all the things that they are supposed to do and wear in the Knesset. 46 first-timers out of 120. I think that's quite an astonishing number. Really? 46 out of 120 are people who are taking up their seats in the Knesset for the very first time. They've been on a kindergarten tour of the Knesset and showed them around and, you know, showed where their offices are and all the things that they need to know about. Of course, where they will be eating and meeting people and things like that. There will be, the bands will be playing, and the president will be there to examine a Knesset security honor guard before he actually then makes his speech for the opening of the 21st Knesset. And of course, on the agenda, the main thing on the agenda, besides, you know, taking pictures with the families and friends, is the election of the Knesset speaker. And it is expected that Yuli Edelstein, who's been the Knesset speaker up until now, will be returned to the seat, and that he will once again be the Knesset speaker for the next session of parliament. And of course, you know, there'll be celebratory glasses of wine and you know, toasts, not only to the opening of the Knesset, but of course to the upcoming Yom HaTzmaut next week. And of course, this mostly will be held in the very, very famous Chagall Hall, which has this huge tapestry and mosaic, which was designed by Marc Chagall. And so it's all very ceremonial, more than business-like. And as we know, the real business of the day is the formation of the government, which is going on not in the Knesset halls at all, but in the back rooms somewhere, in order to try and cobble 61 seats that are required in order to form the next government. So that is the way the things are today. So it's going to be lots of fun and photograph opportunities at the Knesset, but the real business won't start until probably after Shavuot.
Right. And the other important conversation is that the IDF has announced that new technology is now available to allow for the interception of incendiary balloons and kites. That's a big story. What is the latest weapon against terror?
This is a big story, and this is a special electro-optic sight that is being fitted onto assault rifles that makes it possible to follow moving targets such as incendiary balloons and kites and to actually hit them accurately. And the technology even goes further than that, because it actually prevents whoever is operating the assault rifle from firing a missile, from firing a bullet, if the sight feels that whatever's being fired is not going to hit the target. They actually prevent that missile, the bullet, from being fired off. And so it's very, very smart, because one of the big issues about the incendiary kites and the balloons is the low cost of producing them. These things are produced for a few shekels and can do a huge amount of damage. And here Israel is spending literally hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars in order to develop weaponry. And each bullet that is fired off against one of these devices obviously costs an order of magnitude more than the target that's being fired upon. So the idea is to try to reduce the cost of defense as much as possible by preventing the firing of a bullet if the device feels that the target is not going to be hit. And this is all technology that's been designed in Israel. It's been designed by a company called Smart Shooter from a kibbutz Yagur, which has obviously been working in cooperation with the development of weapons and technological infrastructure from the Ministry of Defense. And it's the special sight, apparently, that makes the huge difference, which is being fitted to these assault rifles. So this is a very substantial story. And now that we're heading into the hot season and things will be drying up, and the ground again, the area will be very, very dry and very susceptible to fires being started much more easily than we've seen over the wet winter months that we've had. So this is going to become a very, very important weapon, which is coming into use over the next few weeks and months. And it's going to be interesting to see whether it makes a huge difference to the defense that is required against these incendiary devices.
What's interesting is on some level, there's also the subtext here is that there's an economic war that's at play, because if we see Iron Dome, the cost of firing one Iron Dome missile or rocket, the cost of this compared to the cost of an incendiary balloon, it is very, very much weighs on the side of Israel spending a lot more money. So on some level, this is an economic war as well.
This is absolutely an economic war. And there's a further subtext as well. And the further subtext is that they are spending all their money, even though their devices may be relatively low cost. But they're spending all their time and money on trying to develop ways to attack us. And we're spending all our time and money on ways to defend ourselves. That's, I think, a very important subtext. But in economic terms, there is absolutely no doubt that the economic side makes a big difference here, and it is a main factor at play, because if money was no object, then, you know, Israel would be doing a great deal more already than it is doing at the moment. So Iron Dome is another, another a piece of that economic war, because, as you've said, you know, the cost of firing one Iron Dome missile to intercept the incoming missile is likely to be quite a good deal more than the cost of the missile that's coming in to attack us. And very frequently, those missiles that come in to attack us are not even loaded with explosive devices, but we have no way of knowing it until such time as it either lands and explodes or doesn't explode, or until such time as it's actually intercepted. And then we can see whether it has the explosives loaded or not. And the idea is to try and somehow wage this economic war in a more surreptitious way, in order to try and really goad Israel to spend as much money as possible on intercepting these devices, even though the device may ultimately prove to be no risk to Israel because there's no explosives loaded on it. But that's also, as you rightly point out, part of the war, which is the economic side.
All right. A couple of comments. Clive says no war has ever been won on the defense. Mervyn saying the New York Times should be severely fined and that money should be given to Jewish and Christian charities. And Neil says, how can I be blunt? Will anyone ever have anything positive to say about what they want to gain in pursuing their own agenda? Generally, all people are selfish in what they want to they do to suit themselves. Look, I like to believe that not everybody is selfish in their pursuit, and it's a much better place, much happier place to live my world over yours, I can tell you. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, we don't have a lot of time, but it is an important one as well. Palestinian President Authority President Mahmoud Abbas has announced now that he will not accept tax payments made by Israel from which deductions have been made. What are the deductions being made for, Anthony?
Well, Israel has passed this new law that came into effect recently, which says that whatever money that Israel collects on behalf of the Palestinian Authority, which is quite a good deal of money because the Palestinian Authority doesn't really have the infrastructure to collect taxes in the way that any normal sort of country would do so. So Israel has an agreement with the Palestinian Authority to collect taxes on its behalf, whether it be employment taxes or VAT or any other form of tax. And that agreement says that on a monthly or periodical basis, the money is handed over from the Israeli authorities to the Palestinian Authority, whatever is collected on its behalf. Israel passed a law recently saying that from the money that's collected for taxes will be deducted any amounts that the Palestinian Authority is paying for terrorism. And that really means paying money to families of terrorists who are in Israeli jails, paying money to those who've been killed in terror activities, and the families have survived and the Palestinian Authority is paying them money, and paying money for any activities which can be regarded as related to terrorism. And what we understand is that Israel has been deducting an amount equivalent to something like $11 million a month from the tax revenues which are being paid over, as being a money that they feel that Israel believes is being paid for terrorism. This amounts to about $140 million for the year 2019. And so Mahmoud Abbas is feeling very aggrieved by this, and he's saying if Israel is going to be deducting this money, then they would prefer not to accept any of the tax money at all. We know that the Palestinian Authority is in dire financial straits. Last month, their bureaucrats, the people who work for the authority, were only paid 50% of their salary, and we understand that this month, ahead of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, they're going to be paid something like 60% of their salaries because the money doesn't exist. Mahmoud Abbas has already asked the Arab world to help, and he's requested, would you believe, $100 million a month from donors in the Arab world to help them with their budget problems. And of course, they have got lots of issues because the US funding has also dried up. And so all in all, the financial situation in the Palestinian Authority is a very, very dire and very poor indeed. So lots and lots of issues there.
Absolutely. That's where we leave it. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, we'll chat to you same time, same place tomorrow morning. You have a fantastic day, and we'll catch you then. Time for your news with Lindiwe.